Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me along. When I saw the email from NSA Events, I thought, what on earth does the National Security Agency want with me? So I'm delighted to be here amongst the Brits. The International Cybersecurity Protection Alliance is not very old. We were launched in July 2011. We are a business-led, not-for-profit organization. A bunch of businesses got together and discussing cyber attacks on their infrastructures, on their people, on their customers, wondered what on earth else they could do when they've spent lots of money trying to defend their infrastructure and their people and their supply chains, and they were still getting attacked. What else could they do? And short of some illegal activities, which do go on in various parts of the world where servers are taken down outside the bounds of UK jurisdictions and other things, it was decided that what we should do is try and raise private sector and public sector funding towards helping law enforcement agencies overseas be better at fighting cybercrime. So if you like, take the fight to the enemy. Look at the countries that are attacking the United Kingdom, the US, other parts of the world, the Five Eyes mainly, I have to say, and see if we can't help those countries be a little bit better at fighting cybercrime from a law enforcement perspective. That's where we started. And whilst we're doing that, perhaps spread some of the good practice that exists within the UK, US, and other places to those countries. Maybe build some bridges in terms of collaboration that aren't currently existing. And maybe try and harmonize some of the training and the standards that go into, you know, things like forensic data collection and so on. Because from our experience, law enforcement terms, and military and business, you know, it's not just a matter of getting the right police officer on the end of the telephone in some distant place. They've got to have that capability to freeze the evidence and collect it and present it to you in a form that you can then use in court, if that's what you choose to do. So that was the story that we embarked upon, and we hadn't got very far down the road. In fact, our first engagement was in Ghana in February of this year, in conjunction with SOCA and the ITU. And we discovered, actually, that once you're in there and you start lifting up the hood, you realize that it's not just law enforcement that needs help. There's a lot of other infrastructure issues within those countries that need assistance too. So this morning, very briefly, I wanted to just outline some of the challenges that we're facing and some of the initiatives that are going on and some of the opportunities that we have to really do something special here. So I wanted to paint, first of all, give you an idea of the international organizations that are engaged in this type of work. Because it's clearly not just us. We're very young and youthful, although there's lots of grey hair around on the team. We have, first of all, an excellent initiative in the Commonwealth arena called the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative. Now, that's been in its evolution for about 7-8 years, but last October, the 54 Commonwealth heads of government signed off the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative in Perth, Australia. And that's supported by particularly the UK, Canada, Australia, and others. And the CCI, the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative, aims to do two things. It aims to help mainly developing countries within the Commonwealth with their legislative reform and capability and capacity building for their law enforcement agencies. So that's how we started. And when we got, as I mentioned, out to Ghana, for example, because they were the first country to ask for assistance under this initiative, sure enough, we found that there were a series of laws available, but the Attorney General there did confirm that there was no law in existence in Ghana which enabled law enforcement to prosecute locals who carry out cyber attacks on victims outside Ghana. Well, that probably represents about 98% of their activity. So it goes some way to explaining why, if you look back over time, certainly in the last 10, 12 years, there have been no convictions or prosecutions for cybercrime in Ghana. Not surprising. So there's a bit of legislative work to be done there. Equally, when we met with the various agencies involved in law enforcement, we realized that we were almost starting with a greenfield site, despite amazing work that's been done by SOCA on the ground, mainly to do with organized criminality, not so much on the cyber front. But then when we discussed how to go about our work with the Interior Ministry and the Minister of Communications there, it was apparent that actually there's some help that we could provide to government as well. And whilst we're at it, awareness, education, and training was a big issue, not just for citizens, but for small, medium-sized businesses, the judiciary, prosecutors, and so on. So over time, and it's only over the last 10 months or so, we have redefined our mission somewhat and realized that it's not just a matter of helping law enforcement agencies be better at fighting cybercrime, but actually if government needs some fixing too and they don't have a security architecture, for example, which is resilient to cyber attacks from external countries, and they don't have a handle on training and awareness, then the whole picture looks a little bit dodgy if you just take off one leg of the apparatus and look and try and fix it. So we've got quite a challenge on our hands. And the problem, and the only problem with the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative, was that the heads of government signed it off, and that was a great deal. As I say, it took 7 years to get there. But there's no funding available to support the initiative. So you go to a country, you look at their requirements, and then you say, well, who's going to pay for this? And they kind of look and say, well, I was hoping you would. And we say, of course, we can't pay for it. We're here to help advise and put some resource in, but we're talking about multi-million pound projects over the next 3 to 5 years to get countries from where they are right now to where they would like to be. So there's no funding in place. So we have commenced talks with the World Bank and other governments internationally who are keen to have an influence in those areas. And those areas include many countries in Africa, countries right across the Caribbean, and also in the South Pacific. Excuse me. So that's the Commonwealth. And we have a range of countries that have formally requested assistance, and we have another dozen or so that have provided expressions of interest requiring assistance. So there is no lack of demand out there to improve cyber resilience with their infrastructures. And there's no lack of demand to increase their law enforcement capability. But there is a huge chasm to be filled in terms of funding. So there's a lot of work to be done with the EU and with our partners in Europol and elsewhere to galvanize support and resourcing to fund some of this project work. Certainly, the initial consultancy work, which will at least give a country a project plan for what it needs to do and how much it's going to cost over what period of time. So that's one of the challenges. One of the other initiatives out there, and it brings me to the point of international tension in terms of cyber activity, which I'd like to touch on, because one of the organizations that's also involved in trying to provide capability and capacity support is called IMPACT. And they have joined with the ITU, which is the International Telecommunications Union. And the ITU is a UN agency. IMPACT is an outfit that was set up in Malaysia. And they have combined their resources. And the head of the ITU was educated and trained in various Russian universities. And his second in command is an ex-minister from Chinese telecommunications agency. So I'm not suggesting for an instant that they have any influence over how the ITU and IMPACT operate, but certainly in terms of their infrastructure and the work that they are doing, they have stolen a march into Africa and other places, dispensing fair amounts of cash in order to set up things like computer emergency response teams for government. And anybody who knows the cyber landscape knows that if you want to get a handle on how a country is defending itself or how vulnerable it is, it would be great to have someone embedded in their computer emergency response team within government, because that's where you get most of the information. So if you really want to help a country and you want to establish influence, you help them set up a CERT, as it's called, and from there you get involved in other aspects of activity. Now, that's a well-funded organization. We and the others are not. And one of our calls for support is that if we can't get some international funding behind the Commonwealth Cybercrime Initiative, then we will lose influence and exceed territory in cyber terms to the opposition, as it were. Because in lawful terms, we have, again, two groups. We have the Budapest Convention on Cybercrime, which is supported by, I think, about 38 countries at the last count, including the UK and US. In their view, it's the gold standard for investigating cyber criminality. It's a good framework. It works well. On the other hand, you have the United Nations and others saying, no, what we need, the Russians and Chinese, for example, will say, what we need is a treaty to govern internet investigations. And that side of the landscape also wants to build infrastructure defenses around countries so that they would effectively be able to control internet activities in countries. And obviously, from our point of view in the West, we would see that as a major instability in the way in which the internet is run, because it's our view that it should be open and free to all and should lack censorship except in the most obvious criminal circumstances. So the international landscape is painted like that, and there is a bit of a tug of war going on right now. It'll go on for many years to come, I suggest, and it's Budapest versus international treaties. It's work that the West is doing versus perhaps ITU and IMPACT, although they're very helpful people, exceedingly helpful. And the way that is painting out is quite worrisome, because from a business perspective, if you're operating in a country in Africa, for example, you want to have a secure environment. You want to provide employment for local people. You want to run your operations without being attacked, and you want to help those governments of the day and law enforcement be better at what they do. And if we can't provide the impetus for that to happen, then those countries will suffer from a lack of investment. They'll suffer from further attacks. We have 50% of young people in Ghana, for example, when they leave university, digitally aware. They would rather carry out a scam attacking Western customers on the internet rather than find themselves gainful employment and build businesses in their own country for their own citizens. So there's lots to do. We need to try and turn some of that creative energy to supporting wealth-creating projects in the country rather than into criminality, which is far too easy to undertake. And indeed, we've got some educating to do even in the UK. There was a fellow called Mitchell, used to run the International Development Agency, liked to ride his bike in Downing Street, you'll recall. He can now ride it anywhere he likes except Downing Street. But he wasn't a great supporter, unfortunately, because whilst the UK has got a fantastic international aid program, 80 million a year, for example, to Ghana. It includes spending on governance, security and infrastructure, and wealth creation. But he didn't see that any of that meant spending money on ICT and cyber resilience and security. So he couldn't see the link. The government of Ghana can see the link. The people in Ghana can see the link, that without a secure cyber environment, their economic growth will be stunted. So we've still got some educating to do amongst Western governments who understand about giving aid to hospitals and education, but don't understand that actually having a secure cyber environment is just as important. And I won't waste any further of your time. John, I know we were tight on the agenda, but that's enough from me. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.